Our next guest has over 25 years of experience working with ticket sales, and he's the current Senior Vice President of Sales at DataTalks. Philip Nordfeldt has worked with companies such as Scandinavian Airlines and Austrian Airlines, helping them make sure that they sell out all flight tickets, because as Philip likes to say, once the plane takes off, you cannot sell that seat ticket again. Philip has the same motto for the sports industry. Once the game begins, you can no longer sell tickets to that game. I'm your host, Lorraine Moalusi. Join me as I talk to Philip Nordfeldt about how sports organizations can sell out all tickets to their games while putting fans at the center of everything. Philip, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lorraine. Glad to be here.
Before we begin, we like to start off our sessions with an icebreaker. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
What's your favorite quote, expression, or motto, and why is it your favorite?
Well, I've been thinking about that question because I'm like, I heard something the other day and I think that was really good. And then I will probably hear something tomorrow and I pick up on that one. So there's a lot of favorite expressions. But the one that comes to me naturally is something that I learned from a coach, a personal trainer many years ago. And it's love it, change it, or leave it. And I think I'm really trying to live by this because I think that whatever it is you do, if it's professional or personal or private, if you don't love it, you're not going to give it your all and your best. So I always try to love things I do. And I think that should be like everyone's motto. If you're in sales, or if you're in marketing, or if you're in writing code, if you love it, you're going to do a great job. Now, if you don't love it, can you change it? Can you adapt it? Can you do some changes? Can you, change your environment, change your workload, change your skills? So can you start love it? And if that's not possible, can you leave it? Sometimes it's better to leave it and find something new so you can go back to loving what you do. And maybe you need to change your career or change your country or whatever it is. So love it, change it, or leave it is my favorite motto.
It resonates with me. But something I think of is, this feeling of like when something is not broken, why fix it? Like sometimes it feels like we as people, unless something is like really uncomfortable, we're able to tolerate like the little things and prefer to just complain about the little things versus kind of change things,
Yeah, but that's where I go like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yeah, but if you're not loving it, well, maybe you could do something. Sometimes the change is not that big, and then you can go on and loving it. And sometimes it's just a mindset, So I'm like, try not to just, cope and just do it, because you only have this one life, I believe, and then you should do the most out of it, whatever it is you do.
And what I'm hearing you say is that change does not necessarily always need to be drastic, because when someone says change, we're thinking, well, drop everything and just change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Philip, you've been working on the topic or this area of ticketing for over 25 years now. What thoughts come to your mind when you hear me say this?
Well, I'm still loving it. It's a passion I have, and I think that the challenge of selling tickets is, as you said in the intro, is that it's a perishable goods. If you're not selling it now, tomorrow you can't sell it. So I kind of really enjoy that pressure. I think pressure can be good for you, of course, not too much pressure, but I enjoy that. It's like the competition of always trying to do your best to make sure that you've sold as much as you can today, because tomorrow it's over. So that's what I mean, that's why I'm still doing it. I mean, in a different setting now, it's not an airline, but it's still the ticket, and it's still this fundamental of having the pressure of selling it today, because tomorrow is too late.
And so you love it, so you haven't changed it.
Nope. And actually, that's also one of the reasons why I started DataTalks once back in the day. And of course, it's evolved and we've grown and we've merged and all of that. But my idea basically was that, how can we optimize the process of selling more tickets? what can we do more? And that's where I came up with the idea that, okay, let's use the data. Luckily, I found people along the way who know how to do this from a technical perspective as well. So this is where we're sitting at today. The result is great, but the basic is still the same. You know, how can we optimize the process of selling tickets and offer the right ticket to the right person at the right time and the right channel?
Mm-hmm. And ticketing is a very important topic in sports because the game is for the fans after all. We want them to fill out the stadiums. How do you think the sports industry is doing in their approach to selling out tickets? Are you generally satisfied with how things are being done, or is there room for improvement?
Well, coming back to my you know, love it, change it or leave it, I think that there's a huge opportunity in the sports industry to do more. Because, I mean, if you just look at the average attendance today in sports and compare it to the capacity, it's like, I mean, I talk to so many sports organizations, that's what I do all day long. And it's like, oh, we have an average attendance of, let's say, 5,000 people, and that's great. And I said, yeah, that might be really good. So of course, you have to compare to what did you sell yesterday or last game. But on the other hand, what's your capacity? Oh, we have a big stadium, we have like a capacity of 10,000. Okay, so why don't you sell 10,000 tickets? And sometimes, like, people can be a bit, intrigued by that. It's like, yeah, why don't you sell? I mean, we'd love to, but, you know, it's really hard. And that's where we come in, like, and that's where we say that there's a huge opportunity to really do whatever you can to sell out the stadium every time. That should be your goal. Now, will you manage? Well, I think there's a huge opportunity in the sports industry to grow and to really, take advantage of the capacity you have. And this brings me then to the next topic of this in this area, is like, how can sports organizations become more professional when it comes to the commercial side of it? And this is where coming back on my airline industry, where like selling tickets has become a refined art, and there are some differences, and I'll touch on that in a second. But I think in the sports industry, too many times I hear people whose job it is to maximize the ticket sales saying, we don't have resources. Saying we don't have time, we don't have money, we don't have the staff to actually work with this. And that's where I see that there's a huge, huge potential to do more, because some of our customers say it themselves, you know, if I spend like 1 hour on creating a campaign, I can generate 5,000 euros. What's the ROI on that hour? Well, pretty high, I would say. So there's a huge potential for sports organizations to actually become more commercialized. On the other hand, of course, sports organizations, they have a fine line there because they are first and foremost there for the sports, but also combining the commercial side. So that's where I believe there's a huge opportunity to sell more tickets and generate more revenue.
You've mentioned a couple of things that I would love to explore when we move on. But before that, you work primarily with the German-speaking market, and the Bundesliga has the highest average match attendance in the world when it comes to football. What strategies do you often share with the clubs that you work with on how they can continue to sell more tickets?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I love working in the German market, or the German-speaking market, rather, especially Germany. They have the best fan base in the world. I mean, they're really loving sports, particularly football, and they have also they have good average income, so they can afford to spend more money on this, and they're willing to do this. So what we're talking about with our potential customers and also delivering to our customers, I mean, we've developed the four fundamentals of selling more tickets and more merchandise, and that's quite basic. And the thing is that, first of all, grow your supporter base continuously, because you need to grow your database of supporters that you actually know and start working with them. Secondly, a bit of a technical thing here, but collect the supporter data from all different systems, integrate this. And this is, we've done a great job there at DataTalks building these integrations so we can relatively fast get up and running and get the data and actually structure the data. We know how to do this. So that's something that the sports organization doesn't have to worry about. So collect all the data from different systems and get a better fan overview. Third thing is, you know, to find the right supporter segments you should target with your marketing campaigns. And that's where I think that's where the real fun begins. Me coming from the commercial side, that's where you can start looking, okay, what am I going to offer Lorraine? Because Lorraine is an individual, she has specific needs and wishes how can I understand this, and what offer am I going to send to Lorraine? And then the last fundamental is, of course, send this relevant offering to those segments in the way that your supporters really, really appreciate it. Because that's when the supporter goes, hey, thanks for this message. This is interesting. Yes, I want to buy this ticket or merchandise, or yes, I want to do this, or just yes, thank you. This information was really helpful. So that's where we were talking about, you know, with the four fundamentals: grow your database, collect supporter data, segment your right audience, and start sending out these offers.
And you've mentioned merchandise, and generally in sports, ticketing goes hand in hand with other match day purchases, such as merchandise, brand activations from sponsors, and food and beverage. How can sports organizations get the most out of their ticketing adjacent campaigns, such as the ones I've just mentioned?
Yes, that's a good point, because I mean, ticketing is a very important revenue stream. And of course, if you follow the four fundamentals and grow your database and start selling more tickets, automatically you will have more people in the stadium during match days, and you will sell more food and beverage and more merchandise. I mean, that's just simple math. If there's 1,000 people there, you can sell probably 1,000 sausages. But if there's 2,000 people there, it's easier to sell more sausages. And that's also becoming a more and more important revenue source for sports organizations. And also, of course, merchandise is a very important part here, because even if the stadium is sold out, hey, why don't you start selling more merchandise? And the interesting thing is that Lorraine, we're taking you as an example now. You're the fan. You're one and the same. You bought a ticket, and maybe this data is in one system. Did you buy merchandise? Well, we don't know. Let's have a look into the merchandise data. And surprise, surprise, we'll find Lorraine there as well. And just merging these data points together, then we can see that, hey, wait a second, Lorraine usually buys a ticket every Friday, but she actually never buys any merchandise. Well, of course, that would be a great campaign to sell merchandise to Lorraine. So this is how we can combine the data sources and get a better view of the supporters, and thus understand them more and understand their wishes and needs, and also, of course, come with relevant offerings. And actually, I had a very interesting talk with a Bundesliga club yesterday. And they said, well, we this is one of our biggest challenge, to get all these data into one place, because it's not as simple as I'm putting it now. Oh, there's one person, her name is Lorraine, and here's another one that's her name is Lorraine. Maybe let's go for the German market. There's a lot of Michael Schmidt, which is probably the most common name in Germany, or a very common name, and there's probably hundreds of them in the database. Now, how do we recognize who is who and who has done what? And there, of course, you can go deeper into the data, and this is what you can do with the help of a platform like ours, and really, really get an understanding, so you can start combining not only ticketing sales, but merchandise sales and food and beverage sales. And then, of course, we have the topic of sponsorships, which is also very interesting. How can you use this data? Now we know Lorraine, going back to that example, we know Lorraine, she's bought a ticket every now and then, she buys this merchandise. What more do we know about Lorraine? Well, we know her age, we know her gender, we know where she lives, we know her pattern. Maybe this would be interesting to go to a sponsor and say, listen, we could help you to reach this Lorraine and tell her about your new product that you're launching. Wouldn't that be great? So there's not only ticketing, there's a lot of other things we can help you to do. And we're seeing that many of our customers are really, really succeeding with doing great campaigns here.
It sounds to me that you're trying to take the guesswork out of ticket sales and merchandise and sponsorship, because usually people send out like mass communications and then hope for the best. Whoever finds that relevant will take action, and whoever doesn't won't. But it's probably not that simple. It's not because people aren't interested that they don't buy. It's probably because they haven't been reached in the way that they really appreciate.
Well, actually, that's good that you mentioned it, because yes, that's a good way of putting it. We're taking the guesswork out of it, because what we're doing is we're by using your data, you can analyze it, and you know exactly which supporter is interested in what product and what tickets. And actually, what we've, and also what you said, like spray and pray, like it's been or still being done by many companies in marketing. And I look at this when I get offers, if it's from my local car dealer, or if it's from an airline, or if it's from my grocery shopper, it's like, hey guys, you know much, much more about me. Come on, please do an effort and try to be relevant. Stop sending me irrelevant messages. I just bought this product. I'm not going to buy it again the next day. So this is where I feel like take the guesswork out of it and use the data that is available. And actually, we did a campaign with one of our customers where they was like, well, is this really working, this personalization? And we did the campaign to a targeted audience that we said, this is the audience we think that would be the right audience for this product. It was a merch product. And the audience was like 5,000 supporters. And then we did the same campaign to the rest. They had a database of roughly 100,000 supporters. So we did the same campaign to the rest. And the smaller target group generated more money in real money than the whole rest of the audience. So that just shows that, and of course the conversion rates to the right target group was much, much higher. And what you're doing, not just by, because then you could go, but why don't you just target everyone and you make more money? Well, the risk is that the ones that you're targeting, the everyone, so to say, would be like reacting like me, hey, this is irrelevant, I don't want this. And then the worst could happen is you could say, listen, I would like to unsubscribe, I don't want your communication anymore. And then you're losing out that possibility to talk to that person, to that individual. So that's something that I always like to mention to our potential customers. Keep this in mind. You need to go from, you know, one message fits all, because that's just not the way. I mean, especially if you look at the younger generation, I mean, they will just swipe you away or click you off really, really fast. And then you've lost that possibility for quite a long time. It's going to be very, very expensive to get that customer or supporter or fan back into your database.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of money, and if we could just compare with the airline industry that we started talking about, I mean, in the airline industry, it's sort of well known and understood that they will always innovate and try to improve their profit margins. But in sports, the word profit is not often used, even though we know that that's what the management is hoping for. It's a key performance indicator. In what ways do you think that the sports industry can also try to keep on innovating to increase its revenue without scaring fans into thinking that sports are just becoming a money-making machine?
Yes, that's a very sensitive subject. I mean, we need to understand the difference. I mean, like an airline or like any company, they're here to make money. Their CEO has one objective, is to maximize the bottom line quarterly. That's what. Where sports organizations, they have another. They have one aim, and that's to win the game. And I mean, so that's two major differences. Another difference is that companies, especially like airlines, they have customers. And sports organizations, they have fans. And there's a big difference there. Because, I mean, if you look at like pricing in airlines or taxis or any other commodity, it's like supply and demand steers the price. And I mean, you probably bought an airline ticket like from A to B for $99 or euros, really, really cheap. And the exact same distance, but you know, on the Monday morning or the first day of spring break, it's going to cost you €1,000. So that's like the price is very dynamic there, depending on the supply and demand. But what you get out of this is the lack of loyalty, because nobody's really loyal to an airline if you don't get miles and more or something like that. But because it's, you always check the price. I mean, I don't really care which airline I fly from A to B. I mean, the timetable is, of course, of some importance, but the price is the most important stuff. When it comes to sports organizations, they don't have customers. They have fans. However, these fans, they pay a lot of money. There's quite a high average order value or customer lifetime value. So in a sense, they are customers. But we need to be very careful using the word customer, because that's where the sports organizations are careful, because they're not, their main objective is not to maximize revenue. Otherwise, I mean, some of the clubs that are always sold out, they could just increase the ticket price, you know, and then would only be for the very, very rich. But they don't want this. So this is something that we need to find this and understand this line in the sports industry and work with the loyalty, keep the fans loyal and try to sell more, but really be relevant in the offering. So you're not selling, but you're actually offering them something that they really want and enjoy and like. Because merchandise products, they're not cheap. There's I mean, a jersey for your favorite team, they're quite expensive. but people buy it and they buy it year after year because it's in their DNA. They love this. And the thing is also, as an ex-airline employee, my job was to steal people from other airlines and take market shares. In the sports industry, that's not. I mean, Club A's objective is not to get the supporters from Club B to become supporters of our club, because you're kind of born into it and you love that club. But it's to grow your database and get as many supporters as possible in and maximize the revenue out of that. So that's one of the big differences between, let's say, sports organizations and commercial organizations. But that's also one of the things that I love with the sports organizations, because we can also share best practices. Because if I would be talking to, let's say, Airline A, and we do a great campaign to them, we can't go to the competitor and say, look what great campaign they did, you want to try the same? But in the sports world, this is much more accepted, because they're not competing about the same fan. They're competing about getting more fans to the stadium and getting more fans engaged overall. Mm-hmm. So that's also a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I've read and researched that is quite crucial to the conversation, is the fact that the Bundesliga is actually much, much better at working with this loyalty than, say, the Premier League, for example, because you said in sports, you're not trying to maximize profits by increasing ticket prices, because then it would be exclusively for super rich people. And that's the complaint that the fans of the Premier League keep mentioning, because the Premier League now has become a very, very international sort of product. And it has been international since I was a child, because I remember my favorite team as a child was Manchester United, and my cousin's favorite team was Chelsea. And like, he supported Didier Drogba, you know, like those kinds of things. So they've always been that, like, right at the pinnacle. And so then I think it was Fulham that had a season ticket for £4,000 or something like that. And the season tickets are getting ridiculously expensive. But then I also read that the Bundesliga, I think on average, like, a ticket is €24 or something like that, a single ticket. So I think that the Bundesliga are doing a better job than other leagues at finding that balance between profits and the fans. And also, they have the highest average attendances, so that is working out for them. So what do you think, like, concretely, that other leagues could possibly learn from the Bundesliga when it comes to this sensitive area?
Well, there's so many things, so many different answers. I mean, we haven't got into and I'm probably not the right person to answer this, but I mean, the cost structure, I mean, what is the players' salaries and stuff like that. But if you look at, I mean, again, coming back to the revenue and the ticket sales, where I know a little bit about, I think the thing to remember here is that the German clubs, they really try to get everyone involved. And we are talking to some clubs, they have a challenge. They're sold out always, but they still want to grow their fan base. So how do you do that? Well, they try to, you know, actually make sure that different groups of fans, like younger, actually get tickets without increasing the price. Because, I mean, they don't want to get to that point where, like, of course, it's easy to get a ticket. Just, you know, just put up £4,000 and you have the ticket. So, because then you will exclude so many groups. So I think that's a very, very nice and good way of keeping your fan engaged, keeping the fan base growing. Because we know one thing for sure in sports: you're doing great this year, but next year maybe you're not, and then you're going down one league. And that's when the really important job starts, to keep those fans engaged. And that's where you start doing this. When you're on a high, you need to keep getting as many different groups of people into the stadium as possible. And that can be a challenge when you're sold out. But again, this is a very interesting challenge we have with one of our customers right now, where we were helping them to really get to know their data and see, you know. And sometimes this means, hey, Lorraine, you've been to every game, but we're not offering you a ticket right now. We're trying to offer it to someone who hasn't been to that many games yet. So we keep the width of our fan base and the people also coming to the stadium.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot, just understanding who who is coming to your games and giving them the right message. Because when you put it like that, like, oh, Lorraine, you've been to every single game, but this time would love to give someone else a chance. Nobody, like, of course, some people would get pissed, but you understand it, right? It's not just a, oh, I can't go, you know? So that's... Yeah.
Because we don't want to go, and this is something that's very much debated, talks about in the Bundesliga especially, do we want to go the same direction like in the Premier League where money is I mean they're hugely profitable, which is great, but what about the loyalty? What about the fans? So it's a fine line there.
It is indeed. We spoke a little bit about innovation, and a huge topic in Germany and Europe in general is GDPR. Innovation doesn't typically come without some kind of technological aspect, and you mentioned our platform, the Sports CDP. How can sports organizations embrace more technology without worrying about privacy regulation violations?
Well, first of all, GDPR is very important, and it's really important that you follow it, that you don't break the law. And here, technically, we are supporting you. And I would say that once you've started getting to know your supporters, you know much, much more about them. And when GDPR was introduced, I mean, there was a big, like, oh, what are we doing now? Question mark. And some brands even said, oh, we're deleting all our data because GDPR is here. That's totally the opposite of what the idea of GDPR is. It's just to know and what am I allowed to send to Lorraine and what am I not allowed to send to Lorraine? So we're taking you as an example here. But so technically it's not a big thing, or rather say modern technology can help you to manage the GDPR compliance much, much better. And of course, our platform is 100% GDPR compliant, and our customer success managers will also tell you, listen, here, that's a bit dodgy. Maybe you should think about this and consult a lawyer before you do this, but I would rather suggest you do this. And that's where I come in and usually say that, you know, if you're about to do a campaign, I'm going to send this message to my fan group, but I need to check with a lawyer if I'm allowed to do it. I would say, is that really good marketing? Because the lawyer might say yes or no, or yes, you're allowed to send this, but I would ask myself, is this relevant? Is this something that your supporters would like to receive? And usually when the answer is yes, this is relevant, this is what a supporter would like to receive, then you're also, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not, don't take my word for it, but usually that's then okay to do it according to GDPR. Because that's the sense of it, you know, to protect the individual from getting spammed or getting irrelevant messages. So yes, GDPR is important. Yes, technology can help you. But I would also add the fact that if you're a good marketer, make sure that you're sending relevant information, offers or campaigns or messages to your supporter that they actually enjoy. And then you will have a happy, because you don't want people to read it because you're legally allowed to send it to them. You want people to interact with your communication because it's actually benefiting them. It's like, hey, thanks for the advice. This is the first time I go to this game. I get an email giving me instructions of how to get to the stadium from the subway. Hey, that's good information. Thank you, that helped me. By the way, here's a discount code for your first food and beverage when you get to the stadium. That's also good. Instead of just spamming. So yes, follow GDPR. We do this, technology can help you, but make sure that you have a good message to send.
And I guess understanding your fans means primarily collecting zero-party data and first-party data and not being reliant on third-party data that is being sort of sold by aggregators. It means allowing your fans to volunteer information or be willing to give you information versus you finding their information out at any cost, right?
Yes, I mean, it's a marketplace out there, and especially the younger generations, they know exactly what their data is worth, and they're willing to give it to you in exchange for good and relevant communication. And I would say that's a marketplace. And like every marketplace, you need some kind of regulation, and GDPR is probably here to regulate it, so you won't, I mean, and we are seeing this in the media right now, the discussions about various social media platforms that are, you know, are they really following GDPR? What happens if I sign up on this? But on the other hand, we see also that the younger generation, they're totally aware of this, and they know exactly that they have like five different fake accounts because they can just turn it off because the information is irrelevant. So yeah. I would view it as be very careful with what you do with your data, because it's so valuable. And it's not just about the data, it's about the relationship that you can have with the person on the other side of that data.
Absolutely. Let's play a little game, Philip, shall we?
Yes, please. That's always fun.
Yes, imagine if you said no, it's like, oh, okay, moving on. The year is 2034, so in 10 years. In your mind's eye, what does the sports industry look like in terms of commercial success and fan relations?
2034, it's not that far off. What is it, 10 years? In a blink of an eye, we're there. I mean, I think that the sports industry is probably going to be characterized by much deeper integration into technology. And I mean, we're just getting started here with working with the technology, and especially around the fan and the fan data. And sports organizations will know much, much more about their fans. They will really start knowing them. I mean, for today, for instance, we on average, you can say that if you have 100,000 Facebook followers, the sports organization knows about 10% of them. So there's a huge potential. And I think that this is going to accelerate. And by 2034, all sports organizations will have really good knowledge about their fans. So that's one thing. I think that we talked a little bit about the global expansion of the Premier League. I'm seeing that this is happening in the Bundesliga quite a lot. And I think that even let's say smaller clubs will have a more global reach, because you don't need to be the biggest to reach globally today. You just need to be a bit smarter. So I think that that's something that that's going to expand even more. And I think that coming back to the technology development and knowing the fans better, you will have a even more diversified revenue streams. I think, for instance, ticketing, we talked a lot about ticketing, what will happen here. Merchandise, I think there's a huge potential not only to sell your merchandise, but also start selling other merchandise, because you have a fan base or a customer base of a few hundred thousand. What else can you sell to these people? Of course, coming back to the discussion we had about the commercialization, you have to be careful, but I think there's a huge potential. And last but least, I think that sponsorship is a huge, that we're going to see that a big change in sponsorship in the next years to come. Coming back to the first party data and the fan data, having your logo on the sleeve is not enough anymore. I think that you as a sports organization can leverage the fan data much, much more, talking to your sponsors and saying, hey, I have this target group of specific behavior, needs, wills, age group, and let's target them with this message and let's do something with them. So we target much, much better here. So I think sponsorship sales is going to change also quite a lot. So, and the result of this is that fans will probably have a much, much more interactive experience with their clubs, a personalized experience, and hopefully that will be also lead to a better experience, even better experience. And making the connection between the sports even deeper and more meaningful, because we're seeing that people want to interact with the sports more. And here I think it's a huge potential for sports organizations to really get deeper into the interaction with their fans.
And what impact are you trying to make with the work that you do here at Data Talks towards this future that you just described?
Oh, well, I mean, that's always like, oh, what's your vision? What's your mission? And I mean, we're a global player. We're quite, we have a very good, let's say, presence in the UK, in the DACH market, in the Nordics. We have some traction, and quite some good traction, actually, in Asia Pacific, in Australia. We've got some customers in the US, which is great. And what's our goal as a company? Of course, we want to be, I mean, the best at what we're doing, and we're working quite a lot on that and, you know, delivering to our customers. But for me personally, I mean, I'm focusing on the DACH market right now and I really, really love it. But it always comes back to helping our customers to sell more tickets, to sell more merchandise, make better sponsorship deals. And it's all about, you know, the fan and offering the right message, the right fan, the right channel at the right time. So that's what drives me.
Mm. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And if anyone would like to learn more about the strategies you just spoke about throughout the interview and how DataTalks works, how can they do so?
Oh, yes, please reach out. I love talking to people about this because I'm so passionate. Any channel, email, call me, LinkedIn, SMS, WhatsApp. I mean, come by the office, I'll buy you a coffee. Or next time I'm in Germany, let's schedule a call. But I mean, just look me up on LinkedIn or go onto our website. You will find my details there. Otherwise, it's quite easy. philip@datatalks.se. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Thank you so much, Philip, for what has been a very wonderful and enlightening conversation.
Thanks, Lorraine.